Hey everyone, welcome to the Brock Cannon Podcast. I'm your host, Brock Cannon. This is episode number 40. Had the opportunity to have a conversation this last week with Jungle Man Sam. You'll find out in the episode how he got the name Jungle Man Sam, aka Sam Morton. He is a conscious musician, a conscious coach, a father, entrepreneur, husband, and just all-around fucking awesome guy. This guy takes the most amazing photos on Vancouver Island where he lives. And what I really loved about Sam and the thing that you'll pick up in this episode is he has a really amazing balance of being able to hustle aggressively and really do his thing. And he's crushing business, but also being able to really master the self. And that's why I titled this episode Mastering the Self with Jungle Man Sam, because he's really found that perfect sweet spot between productivity and then also learning how to chill out, do some breath work, do some meditation. He teaches people about the coolest things that you've heard of before: journaling, meditation, consciousness, centeredness. But he breaks it down in a way where you're kind of like, yeah, that makes total sense. And so I think you're in for an awesome content loaded, really, really inspiring episode here. So without further ado, Jungle Man Sam. Hey everyone, it's Brock Cannon. Welcome back to the Brock Cannon Podcast. So stoked today to be on with Jungle Man Sam. And we connected, like many people do, over Instagram recently. I loved this guy's vibe. I loved what he was doing. And just thought we'd jump on and have just a very organic, conscious conversation. Two brothers. I love the work that this guy's doing. So without further ado, Sam, welcome to the show, man.
What's going on, Brock? Thanks for having me on.
So Sam, for those of my listeners that have not totally dived into your story, and I guarantee that they are going to be after hearing your story and your journey today, tell us just a little bit of your background, how you got into music, how you got into meditation, and just where you are today.
Yeah, it's so hard to condense this type of thing. I'm sure you're the same case, right? Where it's like, oh, tell me a little bit about yourself. Okay, which part?
Where do I start? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm totally appreciative. You know, introing with music is totally like, you know, being that kid who just always had a song in his head, always was looking for the next thing, always was just obsessed, you know what I mean? From as little as I could remember, literally. And, you know, picking up bass and, you know, getting pretty good at bass to the point where I got able to get into, you know, one of the biggest music schools in Canada, which is Humber College from Toronto, where I grew up. I'm actually from just outside Toronto.
Okay.
And so, yeah, my context, you know, is very much like suburban city, you know what I mean? Even though I call myself Jungle Man Sam, that came later when I was traveling. But the you know, my background is 100% in like being obsessed with music. And of course, you know, it as a young experimental teenager and stuff like that, you start like learning about spirituality and opening up to some of these things that you'd always intuitively thought anyway, but then you start to discover, oh, people have a whole language for this. You know, I can remember the moment that I like had my awakening when I was like 17, right? Doing mushrooms with my buddies. And then all of a sudden he's like, yo, I got to show you this video. And it was one of those like spirituality, but also sort of conspiracy things. And it was just like, I literally felt my chakras open because it was like, I have felt these things this entire time, that like all is consciousness, all is energy. And like these sort of like fundamental truths of reality. I'm sure you can also like agree with this. There's certain things that we like always sort of thought, we just didn't have language to really speak it. And I felt my chakra system open, like, you know, in that one awakening moment when I was like, you know, 17 kind of thing, you know what I mean? So, you know, the spiritual journey has always been there too. And as I developed as a musician in college, I started gravitating towards leadership, like band leading and sort of making a statement, you know what I mean? More so than just like playing really good bass. So I started doing songwriting and stuff like that. And actually, like, I built my own project. We had a couple viral videos of doing covers of like rap and reggae mashup kind of stuff, you know what I mean? So, you know, I have love of every different style of music. And then I have also like this love of every different style of spirituality and culture and background. I just have such like, you know, reverence for all of these human, these elements of human creation, human art and spirituality. And when I graduated from Humber College, I pretty much went straight to traveling. Like I was just like, yep, I saved up some money doing some wedding gigs and I felt really good. I was like just beginning to songwrite. I'd probably been songwriting for about a year and a half at that point. But I was like really getting into it. And I'm sure you know this story, like something just happens. You know, the travels was to Peru and then Mexico and Nicaragua, Costa Rica, and Guatemala. I can't forget Guatemala in the middle there. And, you know, my voice just opened up. My writing just completely changed. Obviously, I was carrying a journal around the entire time. So I really had a huge transformation. And that would have been me at like, I don't know, 23 or something like that, you know, traveling with a backpack and a guitar around Latin America.
That's amazing. So what made you want to choose Latin America and Central America? Like what drew you to that culture specifically? Or did you just find a cheap ticket and end up there?
Well, yeah, part of that was synchronicity. I didn't mention this, but I went with my family to Peru because we were doing a big family trip. 4 years before that, we had been to Sri Lanka. I'm half Sri Lankan on my dad's side of Sri Lankan. So every 4 years we were doing this like bigger family trip where we go somewhere super cool. My mom used to travel all the time. So she always said like, go and travel after college, right? So I was like, okay, that's the thing. And then yes, I had this sort of like, where am I gonna go? But already the family was talking about Peru and I was like, that sounds awesome. I'm down. Like, let me just not buy, you know, just don't get my ticket home and I'll figure out my way around from there. But here's the thing is that there was three things that I had friends that told me like, Sam, you got to do this. Right. And there, two of them were locations and one of them was something in Peru. And the first one was, my buddy, one of my very best friends, Christian Bridges, who's a Toronto musician. He had been to Peru the year before and he had done ayahuasca, in the Andes at this certain retreat center in the Andes. So that's not in the Amazon jungle where the medicine originates from, but it's brought there from, you know, they actually bring in people, shaman who have like, you know, literally from those shamanic tribes to work with the medicine, bring the medicine from there. And so it's very, very like, it's a lot less like sort of wet and buggy of an environment to be doing your first ayahuasca in. It's a lot more like big, cool, open air, misty mountains and stuff like that. And he was like, you got to, if you're going to do it at this place. He just told me like, Sam, you got to do it there. So I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to Cusco, you know, I can get the ayahuasca experience there. And then, but it was like, okay, what do I do after Peru? And people had been telling me about Tulum for a long time. So I was like, I think I really want to go to Tulum. I heard it was like a really happening place to be. And sure enough, you know, Tulum had some of the greatest, I've seen a lot of music in my life that had some of the greatest musical experiences I have ever witnessed. Tulum was amazing. And then the other place that someone was telling me about for a long time before that, maybe 2 years before that, was Lake Atitlan in Guatemala. And the final one to wrap it all up was Envision Festival in Costa Rica. People were telling me to, so that was four things that I knew that I wanted to do in this and somehow did this huge trip where I basically flew to Peru with my family, I actually did go to the jungle after the ayahuasca ceremony. And then from Peru, I went to Tulum and took buses all the way down through the rest of Central America, all the way to Costa Rica. So I went through from Mexico down to Guatemala and then through, all the Central American countries and had a stopover in Nicaragua after spending some time at the lake in Guatemala, which was also amazing. And then ended up in Costa Rica for really not too long. Costa Rica is one place I want to spend more time, but I was there for about a week for Envision Festival, which was a big life changer. That was in 2016.
Wow, man, that's literally like the dream. So you've got a backpack, you've got a guitar,
it was the dream.
Journal,
and
culture.
And, you know, now that I'm a father, which is a whole second half of my story, I recognize now that I had like no fear. You know what I mean? You have nothing to lose. Whereas now there's a whole different sort of background context to everything that I do. You know, I'm sure you can understand that, right? So when you're at that point where you're like 20 nothing, and you got like, you just finished, you're done your school, you're finished your degree, you got something to go back to if you really wanted to. But if you really wanted, you could stay at any of these places and just never go home, you know what I mean? So there was always that level of just pure raw adventure that I question whether I'll be able to get back to that place now that I'm a father. So I cherish those times. I still kept those journals, man. And like reading through those journals, just, I get tears in my eyes because I just had such open flow towards everything the universe was providing me. And I recorded those lessons. Like I was so diligent about journaling as much as possible, maybe not every day, but journaling pretty much every day was accounted for in my journals, and every experience and lesson was very much accounted for. And that's so magical. You know, I'm so blessed to have been able to experience that.
So tell us where the name Jungle Man Sam evolved from on your travels.
Right. Okay. So, you know, it actually, the absolute honest, transparent story is it was an idea before I went traveling, because I had, at this point, my band was sort of turning into a DJ project. And because Major Lazer was getting really big, and I was just been getting into production. So these are a bunch of like jazz kid music nerds who started, you know, making beats on Ableton and really got into dancehall soca, reggaeton, you know what I mean? Like all these like Caribbean dance music type things that Major Lazer was starting to work with these like drum patterns and these certain things that we were like, oh man, like this is it. This is our time to shine. We could bring this like tropical fusion bass music forward or something like that, right?
Right.
And so my role in this project, we were trying to make like a Major Lazer spinoff, but like have me as like a singer, you know what I mean? So it's like Major Lazer, but with a singer, I guess. And we had a trombone player and a guitar player. So it was like Major Lazer, but half band, half DJ project or something. And we needed names, individual names for all of us, because it can't be just like Sam Morton, you know what I mean? It has to have like some fucking memorable name, you know? So, you know, we had awesome names for the trombone player. It was like Ernesto Trombono Loco or something like that. And then, you know, my guitar player, Nick, was Mix Monk Nick, you know what I mean? It was just like sick. And I can't remember who came up with Jungle Man Sam, but I think it was just like me spitballing like a bunch of like fun creative, like for a bio or something like that, you know what I mean? Just to make it sound larger than life. And then when I went traveling, dude, because again, the context was like, hey, I'm going to write all these songs for like this DJ project, right? But then I got there and I had my acoustic guitar. So what was coming forth was a lot more like of the singer-songwritery side of me, you know what I mean? The more of the lover, the romantic, the, you know, everything, right? So I guess, it, you know, if you were to compare it to anything, maybe it was sounding a little bit more like Ed Sheeran, or a little bit more like people were telling me like Naco and Medicine for the People. And I didn't even know Naco at that point, which was crazy. But anyway, like my style was not in the realm of this like big EDM type thing that I was sort of thinking it was going to be. So I was like, you know, I think I have to have a solo project. And then I was like, well, I guess I need a name, because I never really thought that Sam Morton was like the name to go forth into the world with. And then I kind of had this thing like where I was in the jungle of the Amazon, like after I had done ayahuasca, and I'd actually like had this huge experience in ayahuasca, seeing my life path, you know what I mean? And how I could bridge the worlds of, you know, mainstream and conscious culture kind of thing, you know what I mean? And I was like, I need to have a name for myself so I could play these songs, because I don't think anybody else is going to be able to do these songs justice. I can't give them to Justin Bieber. I can't give them to anybody else. Only they're like me songs. They were so me songs, and I needed a name to be able to come forth. And I was in the Amazon jungle when I was thinking this, and I was like, I've said it before, I think this is it. It's just Jungle Man Sam.
Dude, that's one hell of a story. I love it. I love it. So it stuck. And do people just like, do they call you that now, or just like Sam?
Sam is generally what I go by, without a doubt. And I'm totally cool with that. Sometimes I tag my emails as just Jungle Man. You know what I mean? Yeah. Every once in a while, someone calls me Jungle or something like that. Specifically when I was traveling the Caribbean, you know what I mean? Like they really like that name, whether I was in Jamaica or Trinidad, they totally call me Jungle Man Sam all the time.
I love it, man. Tell us as well, the story behind the dreadlocks.
Yeah, not much of a story, dude. It's been a long time. Not much of a story. I was just 14. And, at one point, so I was like really young, and that's how old they are. There was like a girl who braided my hair, and someone was just like, yeah, you look good with dreads. And I was just getting into like reggae culture, from like everything like from ska, you know, Streetlight Manifesto and this type of thing, into now I was listening to Bob Marley and you know, was getting into reggae, obviously, like starting to smoke some weed and stuff like that. So there wasn't like a huge big like intention behind it. I probably didn't think I would have them for so long when I first did them, but they fit, you know, they fit me. They just became me, you know what I mean? So I've had them for that long, and eventually one day we'll give them up, you know, back to the earth. But at this point in time, I still love them.
I love it, man. I love it. No, it suits you very much as well. Suits you very much. So dude, you had awakening pretty young. So 17, you had that experience. You started to get clarity as you traveled. And then you said, everything really, really transformed at a whole another level when you had your daughter. So would you mind telling us a little bit about that story and kind of the transformation around being a dad?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is back-to-back stories. Like it's, you know, it's such a privilege to be able to share this stuff. Because basically Eva was totally non-intentional. And it actually was with a partner that was not even a girlfriend. It was a one night stand.
Okay.
You know, so not taking away from my actual affection for her, because we had sort of fallen in love over the course of but I was traveling through town, you know what I mean? I was there playing a festival, you know, we had, so like, I was like staying at her place. Cause you know, that was just sort of the friend to situation, you know. Oh, okay. We got somewhere to stay. Okay, cool. And it was just me at the time. There was no band. It was just me solo traveling around. And, you know, it was like one of those things, the last minute, right before I leave, you know what I mean? We connected. And from that point, you know, a month later, I was like, you know, I think I'd really like to just date that girl. I like that girl, you know? And then sure enough, I get the text like, hey, we got to talk, you know what I mean? And all that stuff.
Yeah.
And from there, it just, like, so many synchronistic sort of magical moments happened that it was pretty clear to me that the universe was saying, like, this is something that you need to do, right? And so from the beginning, there was a lot of sort of spiritual messages that were going on, you know what I mean? That I've always fairly been fairly open to, like, whatever the universe provides. And so that was my intention and moving forward. And there was a lot of ways in which we were connected in just ways that felt like it was right to bring our lives together. And so we had to move pretty quickly. You know what I mean? Like, we had to, I mean, I was, you know, a Canadian kid. So I, you know, we got a place in the States and, like basically got married, you know what I mean? And had to go through a very compressed version of, like, relationship before baby, you know what I mean? And all the time, yeah, there was sort of these questionings of, like, well, what is it that, who am I and what do I really want? You know what I mean? When you're about to bring a family into the world, that is just, you know, very much on your mind. Or if it's not on your mind, it's on your subconscious, you know what I mean? And I think that I was scrambling, trying to put stuff together, whether it was like legitimizing my music career, or whether it was, you know, learning what is it going to take to be a father and a lover and a partner, right? As still a young guy who was just getting out of being in the habit of traveling around and sleeping on couches and you know what I mean? Like, not really needing to make money for the purpose of anybody else, right?
Right.
So yeah, I mean, the huge shadow really, you know, to be totally transparent, came when I was then the sole provider, when the baby was born. And you know, that was a challenging experience in its own right. Because Eva was born with meconium aspiration, which is when basically she had trouble breathing as she was coming out and had to, like, it was unclear of, like, you know, what her sort of final status would be, but recovered incredibly well over 7 days. So it wasn't like this long drawn out thing, but it was a bit of a scary start. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, yeah. And so we, you know, but we had to take a chance on something. And it was due to our sort of, like, living situation, where we were and where I wanted to be. I wanted to be in LA working with this label that I'd found. And I was like, really like these guys. We had a song that felt like it was finally, like, this song. Like, finally I had support, I felt like, because before this, you know, I didn't have any monetary support or any, you know, like, I had my band members, but that, you know, it was still me, like, making every move, making every decision, you know, and some of them were not the greatest decisions. So I really wanted, like, some kind of label support, this type of thing. And finally, I felt like I had that with these guys. And so I, you know, chose to take a chance for the family to move us out from Colorado to LA, which was just disastrous in the end. Because I thought, you know, I'm good for this. I can hustle my ass off and work, you know, do my gigs and make money and be able to just make this happen. The guys at the studio, they'll support me and stuff like that. And basically, like, you know, synchronistically, the studio basically disbanded within, like, a month or two of us getting there. One of the guys, he got pregnant for a second time and just, like, fled the country. He was like, I'm out of here. Screw California. I'm going to Costa Rica. And then the other guy's, like, trying to manage everything that they had invested in together. So he had basically, like, no time or resources for me, you know? And so we did do a bit of work, but it was not like what I expected. I worked more with them when I was flying in from Colorado than the entire 4 months that I was there physically, right down the street. Right. And yeah, that was the reality that I was facing, like recognizing like, man, I do not have what it takes to make money, support a family and do all of this. Like, it's very clear that I was in way over my head. So we had to bail out of that. And like, that was a, you know, just obviously a big failure in a sort of like third dimensional sense. You know what I mean? Like just to be at that lowest of low, recognizing that like, you can't provide for your family, your music career is going down the drain and you have to bail bigger than you've ever bailed before. Right. Mm. And this was after a lot of hard work and a lot of, you know, strong intentions and dreams and stuff like that. So I had to sort of start to detach myself from this ideal that I had been building of how everything was going to go. And so we were able to bail to Austin, Texas area where my wife was from, which was a huge saving grace because finally I could like breathe a little bit, you know, and really get down to the baseline of like, who am I, you know? And I still struggled all the way through because, you know, you're still kind of clutching on to this idea of what your career is and what you're capable of what your gifts are for the world. But there was a certain point a few months later when I met a couple of coaches that really inspired me and they were actually musicians earlier. And actually, like only a year or two max before that, they had gone broke in LA themselves and moved to Austin. But when wow. I had this conversation with them, they were the most like exciting, like conscious, lifted people that I had ever had. Like, I was like, this is the greatest conversation I've had in my life. Like, what do you do? Because one of them was a rapper, one of them was a singer, and they had met in New York and stuff like that. So they'd had music careers themselves, but right now they were coaches. And I was like, what? What is this thing that people are like, what does that mean? You know what I mean? At that point, right. I was like, right. Finally, like, you know, cause I'd heard it, but not really that much, you know? And finally I was like, and they were like, you know what? You know, we'd love to show you like a little bit of what we do. Why don't you come to a Wachuma ceremony that we're having and you're having it like this next weekend, right? And at this point it was a little tragic because I'd already chosen to go back to Toronto to be with my family so that they can support, you know, Darcy and Eva and myself as this in the first year of our, I guess, second year of our, you know, little family life together. But I went and I was took part in this beautiful, beautiful day of just incredible transformation of like 12 people that they had at their home with Wachuma and nature and circling up and like really seeing them do, like, you know, masters. I don't know if you've like really witnessed master coaches, and I'm sure you have, but just like the way that they can articulate and work with language to completely like re-architect your mind and your heart, you know what I mean? Connect these things that you just had not connected before. I was just masterful and I was in awe and was like taking part in the Wachuma. So I was just fully heart open, you know what I mean? Witnessing this.
Right.
And I know that my soul at that moment was like, this is the thing that I think I know that I'm like meant to be a part of, you know what I mean? Maybe it's not like meant to be the greatest in the world. Maybe it's not like meant to be doing for the rest of my life, but like, this is the thing that, you know what I mean? That I can transfer from being a musician, being a wordsmith, being a writer and a lover and a creator into something that resembles this.
Bro, I want to back up because two things you said just opened me up and I feel impressed to dive in here. And I feel like a lot of the men listening are going to resonate with this. Number one, I so resonate with the feeling of when that first baby is on the way, there's like an alarm bell that goes off internally. It's like, holy shit, I need to step the fuck up. Like, isn't that true? Like, it's like innate. And it's like, you're like, wow, like this is coming. This is coming. I had my first when I was 21, bro, like incredibly young. And it was the biggest wow. wake up call of my life. I was racing wow. as a professional mountain bike racer, like barely making money, you know, and it was just like, whoa, step it up, like figure this out. So I think that's ingrained in men. And I think that's like, I think it's a really beautiful thing. And just like women have like, you know, hormones and all these things that happen in the transformation and preparation of a child, I think men have it as well. So I really resonate with that. And, you know, looking back, what advice would you give to fathers to be that are A, kind of freaked out and B, like, whoa, what should I expect? What's happening here? Like, looking back, what did you learn from that piece?
Yeah. Wow, man. First, let me, you know, acknowledge that is an incredible feat to be any younger than I was. I feel like I'm just like still completely unprepared at the, you know, starting at age 25, you know what I mean? So to be, and those were a big years, 21 to 25 is a huge jump, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, just, you know, what a powerful way to live life from that point on. And like you're saying, you know what I mean? Everything does shift. There's no question in my mind, I can totally back you up that there has to be, you know, hormonal, energetic shifts in our being, because I know that I'm a completely different person than I was 3 years ago, right? And yeah, of course, that's sort of like the environment of that you're putting yourself through as like taking on that responsibility of like the greatest sort of challenge of manhood, I guess, which you could think of as like providing for a family, for a wife and baby or partner and child. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the lesson that you can learn, I mean, there's, it's endless, right? It's just this huge thing that no one can put words to, that you don't know until you know, you know what I mean? That like, if I could say anything in preparation, is like, release all expectations. Like anything that you're holding on to is only going to crumble and make it more challenging to move forward. And that if I could have told myself anything, is like, don't hold on to this like idea of yourself, idea of your career, idea of your partnership, like who you are as a lover, as a man, you know, there's so many identity shifts that are going to happen in those first few years. And yeah, it'll probably smooth out over time. Like I'm still like riding the waves, you know what I mean? And I don't expect it to slow down, but you know, I know that once Eva's like really got her flow and she's like, I don't know, going to school and stuff like that. But these first like 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years are just massive. You know what I mean? Especially if you're a young man. So, you know, just be completely open and have as little expectation as possible and treat this as a phase of your life where you don't need to be like the reach for the stars person. You know what I mean? Because if you put that expectation on yourself and you fall anywhere short of that due to circumstances, then you have the possibility of sort of beating yourself up and not being present with your family, which is probably the most important thing, right? So I'd say just you know, prioritize presence over accomplishment in these periods of time.
Mm. Dude, that's beautiful. I think that's going to be the quote of the episode.
Let's do that's it. Beautiful, that makes man. Sense.
I love that. You know, one thing that's been like on my heart all the time as a father, you know, is one that's trying to be conscious, trying to be present, is just what you talked about. I think it's like, as men, we go after this innate thing in us. It's the hunter, it's the killer, go out, provide, slay. And yet, oftentimes it comes at the detriment of we aren't there, we're not present. And then all this shit backfires. And I was just on this expedition in Colorado this last week, and I just got back, and one of my dear brothers, one of my dear friends, literally has built an 8-figure company. Like that's not like, that doesn't happen every day. This guy builds an 8-figure company, and we're hiking in the mountains of Colorado. And he's like, I thought that I was filling my cup up, but I'm emptier than ever. He's like, when I hit that goal, I was like, damn, this is all there is. And he's like, now on this quest to fill his spiritual bucket. And that was just like such an awakening to me. And, you know, I honored him for sharing that, because it's like, we hustle, we hustle, we hustle. We think we're doing the right thing by trying to provide, but it's so easy to take our eye off and like, let the moment slip away. So I really love that you said that. And I think, you know, what are some ways you would encourage men to stay more present? Because I know you're super into mindfulness and meditation. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And first I'd like to, you know, acknowledge your buddy there. And that's not a unique experience, right? There are so many men and women who strive for this idealism of accomplishment, right? Which is sort of the based on the ideas that the patriarchy and patriarchal capitalism has put forward in terms of the you know, ideal life and the ideal lifestyle. And that's where, you know, there's an entire opening of where spirit and soul can be filled by infusing creativity and the obvious things like love and passion and ways in which we can communicate better and live more healthy, thriving lives. And this is where, you know, leaders like yourself can step in and offer you know, this greater steps for other people to be taking when they don't really know the way, right? I mean, maybe he does, not to say that's only him, but there is a huge sort of opportunity now for, you know, us folks who are a lot more spiritual minded than we were necessarily money minded, right? To say, hey, like, you know, mindfulness is something that you can access, but yeah, it's not going to be, you can't buy your way into mindfulness. You can't buy your way into happiness, which is the ultimate, you know, sort of thing. And even if you're an 8-figure business kind of person, you know, you can't throw enough money at your own ego, your own psyche, your own traumas, your own shadow, and make that go away. That's there to stay. And it's not there to stay you are inherently a fluid being. We are all inherently fluid beings, but it's when we forget that, because we get so caught up in the stories that we've created for ourselves, that we forget that we can shift into whatever direction that we want to. And that's why there's activators and leaders and healers such as yourself to be able to come in and take that place. Mm. And in this conversation of mindfulness and where my, you know, because everybody has a different idea or experience with mindfulness and meditation, right? When I started, and I find this stuff incredibly valuable, it was more in the traditional sense. So, you know, the teachers that I was resonating with were Thich Nhat Hanh and Eckhart Tolle. And I sat in 10 days silent Vipassana meditation, right?
Wow.
And so this is more the sort of like clearing your mind. And it's sort of like the conversation of like, okay, well, you have a monkey brain that right. is, you know, going for pleasure and lust and you know, sort of like any immediate gratification. And then you have your greater authentic self, you know what I mean? And you could call that a lot of different things. You could call the monkey brain the ego. You know, some people would argue that it's not that. And you could call your authentic self your soul, or you could call it your non-personality or something like that, your fundamental, you know what I mean, spiritual expression. And this is incredibly valuable for someone to be able to, you know, bring your perspective so that you're seeing kind of the monkey mind in play. You know what I mean? It's like, you're seeing the thoughts that it travels to here, and you're no longer like, that's not you. It's just an aspect of you. And a lot of it is stuff that you've learned. You've built habits around that you've learned from other people. It's just concepts and ideologies almost that you're operating with. Right. And so this was really valuable for me, but it didn't feel like the end of the road. Now I will probably return to this, you know, direction and you know, sit in Vipassana again and you know, go for the sort of long silent meditation, you know, more so in maybe a few years or something like that. But right now I'm really fascinated with the subconscious, with the unconscious, right? And this is the stories that are happening that we are feeling like connected to or drawn to. And these are, sometimes they're positive, sometimes they're negative, but they're all these, you know, archetypes and patterns that are operating beneath our level of real awareness, but they manifest in certain ways, whether it's anxiety or stress, or, you know, they interact with our hormones, whether it's, you know, the sort of positive ones like oxytocin, or the negative ones like, you know, the stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol. And I think that this is a huge access point for genius, right? And finding a space for yourself to hold sacred space to access your story. Sometimes it's stories around the masculine. Sometimes it's stories around the feminine. Sometimes it's the stories of where you are in your spiritual mission. But if you don't really hold ceremony, if you don't really find time to go into yourself and ask some of these fundamental questions, then you know, you're possibly victim to, you know, repeating some of the things that you haven't learned yet, right? So right. this is an area of meditation, and more specifically combining meditation with journaling, combining breath work in with that, that I'm absolutely fascinated in, and I think is one of the key aspects of manifestation. You know, people talk about vision boarding and stuff like that in manifestation, but I think it's the spiritual practice, like really bringing it into working with your subconscious on a daily basis, is where I have been able to, you know, sort of like have a bit of a different voice in the world of manifestation and how it works and how you can, you know, create opportunities for yourself by tapping into your unconscious mind.
I'm fascinated by that. And I love the different perspective that you just offered on that. So, you know, obviously manifestation is such a enormous buzzword these days.
Totally.
How you work with people, you coach people through this process. How do you guide someone through quote unquote manifesting what they want?
Yeah. So, I mean, for, I have a whole course on this. This is a big part of my offering is a course called Manifestation Mastery. And it starts with simply just the perspectives, right? Cause some people haven't been exposed to some of these, perspectives of law of attraction of, you know, the vibrations that you're creating is essentially, you know, creating more of that same vibration. Right. And, starting to understand the ways in which you are perpetuating some of the negative things. So it starts with the healing process is what it is, right? You have to heal your mindset. You have to heal, sometimes it's your body, you know what I mean? And so your body, mind, and your soul, your spirit, or which is also connected to your heart. These are the areas that you can, if you're blocked here, if you're still like in a repatterning kind of phase, you're not gonna be able to get into manifestation because you're blocking yourself, mind, body, and soul somewhere to be able to expand, to be able to, you know, transform, alchemize your thought into reality. So I start with the healing and I say that the path of healing can be long and there's a lot of shadow and it's not like you're ever going to, you know, finally leave healing. There's no more left to heal. You're always going to be healing something, but there's this transition point. There's this threshold that you can at one time surpass in which you've healed enough of the blockages, enough of the stories, enough of the traumas, the things that have been holding you back, both in your subconscious mind and in your level of awareness. And now you recognize like, wait, I'm actually behind the wheel here. Like I actually can throw this into stick shift and bring it up. Like if I want to, like you actually just feel finally empowered in a full body kind of sense. And sometimes it's like an instantaneous breakthrough, just like one meditation one day, you know, that you just, this one word came into your mind and activated this, you know, something that was lying dormant in your genes. And all of a sudden your genius awakens and you are this manifestor being. But it happened after a lot of healing. It happened after a lot of like stepping into the shadow space and being fearless and courageous in doing so, right? And then you have the opportunity to like get into manifestation and to all of the different mechanics and how it works and stuff like that. But, you know, the healing process, a lot of it also too, is just like stripping away the shit. You know what I mean? We live with so much that we think we value this. We think that we should, you know, we should do this in order to like sort of please the people in our society that we want to please. And that is a huge, huge part of it. I'm sure that, you know, you've seen this within yourself and within others that once you start to minimalize and actually look at your habits, actually look at like the real core of who you are, then you're able to just live a lot more lightly, a lot more carefree. And you start to see the opportunities that are constantly around you. And then you start to manifest the opportunities that would not have been there prior to that.
I love that perspective, man, of healing first, because like I couldn't agree more. And, you know, being someone that's like had to do a shit ton of healing, because realizing it's kind of like, this is the oldest analogy in the book, but it's kind of like, you know, you're watching a boat, it's cruising along in the water. The boat's got a couple of holes, not a huge deal for a while, but like keeps going, the hole gets bigger, more water's flooding in, and that boat just like slows down more and more and more. And eventually, unless it's patched, it's gonna capsize, it's gonna drown. And I think that's like spot on with the healing. It's like people numb themselves, they bury themselves in other shit, or they just are too quote unquote busy to ever look at it. And then they wake up one day and kind of wonder like what happened. So I love that perspective, man. I think that's huge. I want to continue on that, but I wanted to ask you personally, because you went through some struggle, you went through some rough patch. How did you overcome your own shadows, your own demons, and maybe even your own unworthiness? How did you work through that to get to kind of where you are now?
You know, as much as someone might be on the edge of their seat waiting for that breakthrough, it was a combination of so many little breakthroughs, you know, and it's just feeling that moment where you, and it came from books and courses. Like for me, I'm like such a learner, you know what I mean? Like I'm always digging into something. right? And it's just kind of riding that wave of like, whoa, that opened me up right there. You know what I mean? That was something that I wasn't cognizant of. That was something that I could use now as a tool, as a strategy when this arises again. And so, you know, fuck, like you break down sometimes during the rough times, and it's still, you know, it's still present. There's nothing that, like, you know, has, you know, it's still an ongoing battle, right? Or an ongoing, you know, you could call it like war with yourself, with your mind, or you could think of it in a lot of different ways archetypally, right? But the more that you continue to equip yourself, the more that you continue to feel that edge of your comfort zone and just keep going. I can't really offer anything more than that. You know, there's not really like one single breakthrough that will completely eliminate all shadows. You know what I mean? You just got to keep showing up and doing the work and being okay with it being a really like ugly process sometimes, right?
100%. What was that time for you that was kind of the greatest struggle, and maybe where you had to really push through some feelings of unworthiness or like, shit, how am I going to get through this? Was that when you were really going hard and pursuing everything in LA? And like you said, it didn't go the way you'd hoped, or was there another time in your life that kind of stands out as really the most trying or challenging?
Yeah. I mean, the entire journey of coaching and like learning what my place is within this world, because again, I'm coming from being a musician, right? So like, what do I have to offer people? Right. And, you know, knowing what I wanted to create for my life, for my family, for my future, but really not knowing how it all fit together. You know what I mean? I think that the biggest challenge for me in that world was distilling all of the knowledge that I was gathering, because knowledge is great. Like I said, I'm an avid learner, you know what I mean? And it empowers me. But shifting from that into now, okay, now I got to get results for people and actually prove myself in something. And that's something that still is relatively recent, because, you know, haven't been a coach for super long. It's been about, you know, a year and a half. And, you know, having that transition from like, okay, I'm this cool, you know, I'm teaching people how to do stuff, into like, now, no, you know, I got to actually really pull a result out of somewhere. You know what I mean? And really make this very tangible, you know what I mean? Because I think a lot of coaches are very into speaking about metaphysicality and you know, spirit and all this stuff, but they're not very focused on like, well, what is the actual result of what they do, right? Right. They're especially focused on it on the front end in terms of like, well, I want to get a result out of somebody. They're more like, well, who out there is willing to pay me for me to talk to them about all the spiritual stuff that I know about, right? And it's this sort of backwards thing that I'm not sure who's maybe propagating it or whatever. But I'm trying to, you know, I've been shifting that area of like where my focus is in terms of coaching, in terms of my business and all this stuff, because, I mean, if there's any coaches out there, they understand that like, sometimes this thing's like up and down, you know what I mean? You could have a great month and then the next few months after that are like nothing. And you're like, what the hell did I do? Like, I thought I had this in the bag. Like, what happened, right? And right. I think that being results focused is the answer there. You know what I mean? When you start just like sort of overvaluing, I guess, the teaching and the knowledge aspect of it, you start undervaluing your actual magic, your actual ability to do stuff for people. And then it sort of, it goes away. And then you're left with like, you're back at ground zero because you don't really have something to work off of. And that was something that I experienced over the past, you know, like 6 months. And so I've been shifting that for myself and helping other people shift that as well, because it's been a huge breakthrough.
That's a huge, huge shift. I appreciate you sharing that, especially for any entrepreneurs or coaches that might be listening. I think that's a huge takeaway. I love it, man. So tell us, one of the things I always find so fun on the podcast, all the cool guests that I have on, it's like, you said you're a learner. I love learning about just who you are, like what makes Sam tick. Like, would you mind walking us through a typical or atypical day that, you know, what does it kind of look like for you? How do you fill yourself up? How do you serve? How do you show up each day?
That's great. I can totally answer this because I'm very, very like conscious of my day and my time. You know, that's one of the things that as entrepreneurs that we need to get like ridiculously like just adamant about, you know what I mean? It's like, where is my time going? How do I structure my day so that I can, you know, create the greatest amount of success? That's what my manifestation is all about. That's what my business coaching is all about. You know what I mean? So it's something that I hold a lot of pride in. And you know what? The thing that I can say that I'm like in love with over the past few months that I just don't know how I lived without it before this is Monday.com. And it's like this mix of Google Sheets and like, I don't know, your average sort of list, you know, your to-do list with like reminders and stuff like that. It's like that on steroids, bro. It is the sickest thing. Color code everything. You can have like different views. And I am just like right now, like the biggest Monday.com advocate. It's just the best way. I don't know if people are familiar with Trello and Asana. I love those two. But this is like Asana like times two, you know, it's just for me, it's so helpful to work because I have a lot of different things that I organize, whether it's, you know, aspects of my coaching business, whether it's my ideas that I'm sourcing from my coaching business, or, you know, here's like, you know, just throwing an idea here. And then what happens to that idea, right? You have to have a system and process to be able to transform that into your content or into your course or into, you know, whatever that is. So I have these things that I built for myself to be able to effortlessly do that, you know, many times over. And it obviously right now I'm into the content planning thing as well. And I even have one for the books that I'm reading or want to read. I categorize them in so many different ways. So I'm a Virgo. I'm actually like multiple Virgos in my chart. So like me, I like to be like as organized as possible. That doesn't mean my desk is necessarily organized, but my computer, my like, you know, internet or so I guess like electronic life is highly, highly organized. But yeah, man, my daily, you know, checklist looks something like this. It's like, you know, very first thing in the day is the time that you have the most access to your subconscious. So I try to work with meditation, writing, breath work, journaling, these types of things right at the very, very beginning of the day, because I am the freshest. I have the most creativity. If I can get any content creation, like writing emails or posts or whatever the sort of creative side of it, I try to do that like ASAP. You know, and if I can wake up at 4:30 or 5, I'm a happy man, you know, and if it's not that, I'm like, I don't like hold, you know, I have a two-year-old, you know what I'm saying? So, right. It's not always going to happen the way I want it to, but, you know, that's my happy place is 4:30, 5 a.m. wake up and, you know, get into the meditation, journaling, breath work type routine and some body movement too, which is super important, but nothing crazy. My workout usually I do later, but I get into the sort of creative side of my business first thing, right? And you know, and I basically have like minimal processes that I try to only have about 3, maybe 4 activities every single day, but that I bring my full presence there. So I'm not trying to multitask, you know, so many different things. Obviously, sometimes to-do lists can build up and that is what it is. You know, sometimes I, you know, whatever, you got to crush some things in the very beginning of the morning. That's probably my best time to catch up on a to-do list. But I love having collaborative talks like these, whether it's obviously working with clients or jumping on a podcast, even just jumping on Instagram Live can be super fun to kind of keep the ideas flowing, you know what I mean, in this later half of the day. And then, you know, as much as I can, if I can review the day in terms of what my metrics were, you know, how many people I reached out to or how many, you know, different conversations I had or how many posts I wrote or planned or something like that. These are the types of things that you can review your metrics, you know, throughout the day, throughout the week. And, you know, my ending my day, I'm always like reading, but usually through audio. So I have tons and tons and tons of audiobooks and obviously podcasts and courses and stuff like that that I'll be listening to as I go about doing my dad duties, whether that's, you know what I mean? I don't know, like folding some laundry or cooking dinner or something like that. I'm always trying to listen to something to keep my mind expanding. And, you know, before bed, before falling asleep, it's reading and repeating in my head affirmations or listening to and repeating in my head affirmations.
Dude, that was loaded. That was loaded. That's why I asked that. Cause it's like, it's so cool to just get in the brains of successful people and their habits and what they're doing. I love that, dude. Thank you for sharing that. I wanted to ask you about affirmations because this is like, I'm a believer. Like I've done affirmations my whole adult life, even younger than that. I'm a believer, but you know, there's skeptics out there with affirmations. People think it's just kind of like positive bullshit. Does it really work? Does it really not? How how do you go about crafting your affirmations? And more importantly, how do you integrate them into your life? And what advice would you give to people that are on the fence about affirmations?
This is great. I mean, you know, anybody who's on the fence, you don't have to drink the Kool-Aid. You know what I mean? Like, but I mean, positive psychology is factual. There's nothing unscientific about positive psychology. Basically, like, when you feel better about yourself, you end up doing better work, right? And that that doesn't take, you know, sort of any level of you know, belief in anything non-physical to be able to say, okay, I would rather be happy than be upset or be frustrated or something like that, right? So let's take it just from that space, you know what I mean? And see the value that they create just in a very, I guess, like real sense in terms of grounding into the type of inner language that you want to have. I think that's the biggest thing, is that we have all this like inner language that's going on. It's like, oh, you stupid, oh, you messed up here, oh, you know, and we don't recognize that we're saying this stuff to ourselves because it's so, we do it so much that it blends into the rest of our day, right? And so, you know, how do we manage this? Yes, mindfulness and actually noticing the ego mind, maybe barraging ourselves with negative language that we may have learned from other people, is very effective. But how do we just really actually shift it over time, is we have to replace the negative information with the positive, right? And so these come in the form of sentences. Sometimes they're really long and involved, you know what I mean? Like something about like, you know, I am strong-willed and always show up in this way, and you know, so that I can, I don't know, like make abundance happen in my life and money. I'm not, you know, it's not obviously not something I have memorized, but like these like long form multiple sentences almost like joined into one. Or sometimes as simple as like, I am, right? I am bountiful, or I am beautiful, you know, and they hold so much significance. So you know, whatever your soul, or if you're not into souls, then whatever you're sort of, you know, you are drawn towards yourself, right? That speaks to you, right? Because the biggest thing is it has to resonate with your heart. It has to really do something there. It has to be felt. And that's what, you know, one of these core teachings of manifestation is like, it's only as strong, it's, you know, as how much you're feeling it, right? So if you're all in your head and you're all logical and you're all like, this is bullshit, then you know, it's going to be hard for that to truly manifest into anything, because your heart is so blocked from truly feeling, right? That's okay. It's like everyone comes from their own place. I am for sure a highly, highly skeptical and intellectual kind of person. So that I still have some of those things in my mind. Is this real? You know what I mean? Like it's okay, basically, to accept that you are not like 100% a Kool-Aid drinker, and that's fine, right? I don't think it's better or worse to be drinking Kool-Aid or not. You know what I mean? In terms of the how spiritual you really want to go with it, because there's always going to be value in either direction. Now, it's just about, what do you want? What do you really want to create for yourself? And it has to start from within. How do you want to language within your mind? Okay, well, there's affirmations for that. How do you want to feel about yourself? Okay, well, there's affirmations for that. And then it can grow into like, what do you want to manifest? Is it more money? Is it more confidence? Is it more, you know, a lover that like speaks to you in this way? Okay, well, here's the thing. The more that you say it, the more that you believe it. That's just, you know, over time, you're patterning your subconscious to believe something, believe something, believe something. And the fact that you're actually saying it out loud is making a difference. You want to pump up the gas, you could say it into the mirror, looking yourself dead in the eyes, saying that. And that challenges you to like create that reality. So you are then going and creating that reality simply for your subconscious. And then if you don't want to be metaphysical at all, it's basically like you are building the level of confidence so that when that opportunity does present itself, your friend's offhandedly talking about some business thing they're looking for someone to partnership on, right? Or that girl is walking down the street. And normally you would be like, you are not worth it. Don't even try, you're gonna fail. But now you've been indoctrinating yourself over a period of time to open up to this reality. So there's nothing metaphysical or magical that happened about that person finally walking in front of you, or that conversation finally being had in your presence. But the thing that is different now is that you've trained yourself. It's more like training yourself than it is, you know, creating any magic.
Yeah, that's exactly spot on, man. And it's like, people have such a hard time for some reason believing that thoughts become things, but yet it's like we can all go back through our lives and find evidence of that if we really try to, but we fight it, you know. It's like
totally. Yeah, it's
like, why is that so hard? I'll never forget I'll be really brief with this story, but like I was 16 and I was at this mountain bike race and I had just moved up to the pro category and it was in May, early May. And I was like, just kind of coming into my fitness for the year. And long story short, I got my ass kicked, literally got last place in the whole pack. And it was like, talk about self-doubt and just like shame spiral and like, oh my God, like I shouldn't be here. Like this was a big mistake. I should have stayed in the other category, you know, where I was comfortable. And then I remember going to Big Bear for nationals the next week, literally 1 week later. And I went out and I rode the course and I still was like kind of carrying some of the, like the defeat from the previous week and, you know, going and thinking, oh God, how am I going to do this? But I don't know if it was like a coach or I had read somewhere, but I somehow went out and rode that course and I came back and I got this idea like, okay, Brock, like just close your eyes, man. And why don't you just imagine the course? Imagine where you're going to go like super hard here. Imagine where you're going to recover here. Imagine where you're going to pass people here. And that's all I did. Like in 1 week, it wasn't like my fitness was that much different, but I did the race that weekend at nationals and I ended up getting in the top 10. And it was like, holy shit, this like visualization stuff works. And like, you know, it's like, that's all the difference. And so like, I love that you said that it's like people just, it's coming into that, it's seeing that. And then when those opportunities are presented, it's not like this is an accident, like, boom, I was expecting that. So bro, that was really, really good shit. I thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you touch on visualization, a whole other mechanic, a whole other technique that one can tap into. So yeah, we covered a lot here. And, you know, there's always opportunity to jump deeper into these worlds. What, you know, however your sort of level of belief is in this stuff, there's so much value. And it crosses over in so many ways in our life. Like for you, like in sports psychology, you know what I mean? Visualization in sports psychology has literally been the master key behind the success of everyone from MJ to, you know, Kobe and like all of the big greats, you know what I mean? So this stuff is not that far out. You know, it just depends on who's presenting the information. Are they like, you right. know, total hippie, or are they, you know, more psychology oriented? It's all saying a lot of the same stuff. It's just about who's saying it. Are they impactful for you at that moment? And this comes down to like, you know, picking the right mentor, picking the right coach when you're feeling like, I'm ready for an upgrade. I'm done with this aspect of myself. I'm ready to get into this next thing. You know, a lot of people are going to be saying a lot of the same things, but it really comes down to your own intuition, and your intuition guided you to do something that you had never tried before. And it brought you some success, right? So if you're able to trust that inner guidance system and continue to trust that, I think that's one of the best things that you can develop. And that's something that I've been very much dedicated to for myself and my people.
Mm. Sam, thank you, brother. That was jam packed. Good stuff. I'm so stoked to go through and just digest this and dive into this myself as I go through before we put it out. Last question though, what is the best and most preferred way for people to get in touch and say hello to you, man?
Thanks, brother, for having me on. This is such a pleasure. And yeah, Instagram is my favorite place to be. Probably, you know, I'm also elsewhere, but that's probably the best place that I. You know, shoot me a message. I pretty much answer everybody and have lots and lots of content and I guess like news and updates and stuff like that shooting out there. So Jungle Man Sam, no dots or underscores or anything like that on Instagram. And if you want to listen to my music, it's available on Spotify and YouTube.
Awesome, brother. Well, I'll make sure we have links to everything in the show notes. I love your photos, by the way. Like you just have some just cool ass photos, man. Out in nature, just primal, just out there with your dreads. It's like the best, man.
I got to give a big ups to my partner, Darcy, who's an incredible photographer that I'm so blessed to be able to work with.
Ah, dude, yeah. Huge bonus. That's
huge
great.
Huge bonus, man. No doubt.
Awesome. Well, brother, thank you for sharing space and for teaching all of us today. Really, really appreciate it. And hopefully I can have you back on the show at a later date. Maybe, you know, we'll check in 6 months to a year. I would love to see how things go, man.
Absolutely, Brock. It was a pleasure, man.
All right. And thank you everybody for listening to the show today. And we'll have everything in the show notes. And we will see you all on the next episode. Peace.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that episode with Jungle Man Sam, and I hope you had some takeaways as well. You know, just the very simple yet so profound practices of daily journaling, meditation, and just really allowing yourself time and space to feel is really the ultimate key to productivity and progression, because if you are burned out and stressed all the time, you're not going to go very far. So I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. If you have, please share it with friends and family, and make sure you also follow Sam on Instagram. Like I said, he's got some amazing photos. We'll have links in the show notes here. He's very responsive if you want to DM him and just say what's up. And I hope you guys have an amazing day. We'll see you on the next episode. Peace.